This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking today about green burials on Keeping the Faith with two guests by telephone, Kimberly and Billy Campbell. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, great.
Yes, we can.
Very good. Now tell me where are you? Where are we talking to you from? Where are you?
Well, we're in Westminster, South Carolina, so that's the western tip of South Carolina.
And you're the founders of the very first green cemetery in the United States called the Ramsey Creek Preserve. Is that correct?
Correct. We actually started the company up in 1996 and then had been talking about green burial for a number of years before that, just doing some speaking and that sort of thing. Finally formed the company in 1996 and then opened up Ramsey Creek in 1998.
And tell us what green burial is.
Well, I guess there are two different things. There's simple green burial, which is basically what Jewish people and Muslims and some Orthodox Christians do, which just means you're not embalmed. You're in a plain wooden box, a casket, or other biodegradable type casket, or just a shroud, or even your regular clothes. There's no vault, and you're buried into the ground. And then a very simple marker. Then on the other hand, what we're doing is we call it conservation burial because the point of that is to actually save land. It's a restoration tool to raise money for actual land purchase, land preservation, and ecological restoration.
I want to ask more about conservation burial and what that involves, but let me let our listeners hear the other voice we have also on the telephone. This is your spouse, Kimberly.
That is correct. Hello there.
now your voice sounds slightly different than your husband. Where is the South Carolina accent?
Well, actually, I'm from the southwest part of England. I was born in Barnstable, Devon, but I've lived in the States now for over 30 years and in South Carolina for most of that time, so I'm nearly native, but anyway.
Now tell me, how has this partnership worked for this conservation burial opportunity that you both have worked on?
Well, you know, my husband is a physician, a practicing family practice physician in Westminster, and on a bad day, he's the worst doctor in town. On a good day, he's the best doctor in town because he's the only one. So Billy's focus is mainly the science part of it, I suppose, and I'm the one who does most of the sales and things like that. But we work together at the preserve. We give talks together, and my parents also live in a house on property adjacent to the preserve, and they also help us take care of it. And when they pass away, the little house that is there, stewards will move in who will take care of the preserve.
And Billy, how often since 1996, when you started this, have you heard people joke with you about burying your own mistakes?
Oh, I hear it all the time. Actually, and that was one of the things that kept me from opening, I guess, for a while.
Of course,
I was a little timid about the doctor with his own cemetery kind of thing. I did have one patient, probably the best comment was the patient told me that me going into the cemetery business was like a vet who got his taxidermy license and put a sign in the window that said, either way, you get your dog back.
Now, how big of a town is Westminster?
About 3,000 people.
And how do you get enough business?
Okay, we have about 5,000 patients. The county's 60,000 people, but Ramsey Creek, we have, and Kimberly can tell you, we have people buried from all over.
Yeah, we have people buried from California, from Boston, from Maryland, from Virginia, from Tennessee, from Illinois, from Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, local people as well, people who live 2 miles up the road from the preserve. And then people from, the lower part of the state, which is about from the coastal area of South Carolina, and that's about 4 hours away. To this point, we probably have we have over 80 burials, and most of them natural burial, but we do also accept cremated remains that can be scattered or buried. And then we probably have an additional, I would say, about 300 sales in pre-need sales. These are from other people, you know, who aren't dead yet. They've reserved plots at the preserve. And these are also people who from New Jersey and from New York and who live from far away from here. Obviously, they're not attracted to Westminster for its great sort of metropolitan going on and stuff like that. You know, they really are attracted to the concept.
And also, it is a pretty sight, and we have about 220 species of vascular plants. We just doubled the size of the preserve. We now have 3/4 of a mile of Ramsey Creek frontage, including a little gorge with some big shoals on it, and lots of azaleas, and we actually have 4 species of trilliums and 8 species of orchids. It's just a really nice. It's a nice place with the sound of water. So it's in and of itself, it's pretty. But Kimberly's right. People don't come to Westminster just for Westminster.
So to picture this for our radio listeners' imagination, they should think of Augusta National.
Not exactly.
Well, we do have,
but you mentioned azaleas and dogwoods.
Azaleas and dogwoods, for sure.
Lots and lots of dogwoods. We just had a cold snap that unfortunately cut our season a little short with some of the wild azaleas. We do have one, the rhododendron phlymium, that's native to just the upper watershed of the Savannah River, and it's kind of a later bright orange azalea, and it'll be coming in about a month if the buds didn't get hurt too bad. But it really is we do have some open meadowlands that we keep. Actually, we had a field burning yesterday, a control burn for the eastern meadowland plants, including we have one federally endangered coneflower that we grow there. So even though it's relatively small, we're up to 70 something acres now. It's a pretty diverse place with lots of animals, butterflies, dragonflies, that sort of thing.
When you talk about a controlled burn of this eastern open meadow, here in the Midwest, we call it a prairie.
Right.
And we've had controlled burns around here. In fact, one of the programs, I'm the director of the local university YMCA, and one of our student programs is called Red Bison, because that's what the Native Americans thought the prairie fires looked like, a herd of bison moving across the prairie.
Mm. Well, I know in Illinois it's been a real kind of area where a lot of prairie restoration has been going on. I think that's where the big Fermi Lab and all that stuff up near Chicago.
That's correct.
A lot of burning up near there, so I knew that Illinois was pretty much at the forefront of that sort of thing, and I followed it, and we were able to identify that even in the east there were these open areas, there were wood bison, and back 300 years ago, and a lot of there's a mountain nearby called Grassy Mountain. It's not very grassy, and it's one of the reasons why the echinacea has had a hard time, is because we've suppressed fire, and then we've grazed it. So what we're trying to do is keep an open mind, and with those eastern meadowland complexes, keeping them burned, even though people are buried there. And might give some people pause, but certainly if you're doing this in an area like Urbana, and you're probably going to have to do some burning if you're going to keep the natural landscape.
Of course. And Tell us how you got interested in this kind of nature preservation and combining it with a cemetery, with a green burial.
Well, my background was at Emory University, and I was studying ecology and human ecology, and was very interested in how humans interact with the landscape. And while I was in medical school, I continued to read, and I read about a tribe in New Guinea that kept what they call spirit forests in an otherwise very densely settled area. And the anthropologists described it as a pocket wilderness. They didn't actually bury people there, but it's thought that the spirits of the dead lived there. So it just kind of it occurred to me, well, why couldn't we do this with our memorial parks? I'd taken some death studies courses and had read The American Way of Death and Ernst Becker's Denial of Death in college, and so I guess it just kind of clicked that maybe this would be a way. Also knowing that from reading The American Way of Death, what a tremendous amount of money people spend on funerals in the United States. I think it's right now between $15 and $20 billion a year. It just occurred to me, I said, gosh, if we could get 10% of that for land conservation, it would be a lot. It would be a pretty big pool of cash to do that with. But more importantly, or at least as important, I think it offers an opportunity for what Bill Jordan, who I think is now up in Chicago, who coined the term restoration ecology. He says that, you know, we need to re-inhabit the landscape, and he thinks through ritual that we can connect people back in a more direct sense, not just landscape as a place you go out and get your yayas out or you extract resources, but a place that you're spiritually connected to. And so that's part of it, is how do we rebuild those connections between human communities and natural communities. So it goes beyond just purchasing land, but also can the process of burying people in the landscape be transformative for a lot of us who are more or less alienated from nature at this point?
Let me reintroduce our guest. We're talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon about green burial with Kimberly and Billy Campbell by phone from South Carolina, where the first green cemetery in the United States is. They founded it at the Ramsey Creek Preserve. Now, is this a nature preserve which is also a cemetery? Is that a fair description?
Yeah. I mean, that's one thing we like to say. We're only going to be burying in the original part of Ramsey Creek is in pretty good shape. And we looked at it, and we figured we can't bury more than 1,000 to 1,500 people in that original 33 acres or so. Without causing a mess. Now that's, you know, most cemeteries have 800 to 2,000 people per acre. So we're going to bury about as many people on 33 acres as you would normally bury on 1 acre.
How can you afford it?
Well, for one thing, you got to remember the upkeep is not nearly as much. So, and also with the land costs and everything else, it makes sense. We just don't have that much upkeep. There wasn't that much infrastructure development to do other than a chapel, and a lot of that was done with donations. But if you do the math on that, it actually turns out to be a pretty good return per acre. We charge about $2,000. What is it, Kimberly, 1950 or something like that?
Yes.
For a plot. And if you're doing 30 to 100 per acre, our new session will probably do more like 100 per acre. Well, that's not too bad. I mean, that's, you know, $300,000 per acre return is a pretty good return on investment.
But aren't there laws in South Carolina, like there are in Illinois, that if you set up a cemetery, you have to guarantee perpetual care of that place?
Yes, and we put 10% of the fund aside in a permanent trust fund. And we are regulated, you know, like other cemeteries that carry perpetual care. In South Carolina, of course, the thing that people are buying when they buy a place with us, what they want the assurance of is that this is going to be kept in its natural state, and that, you know, because they don't want that other look. They specifically, you know, come to us because they want this sense of simplicity and this natural look.
I would say, tell you also, in a place like Urbana, if you're in an area, you know, our ideal site would be a piece of land that fits into a landscape-level conservation effort. And sometimes that means that it could be owned by an institution, and maybe they're trying to figure out what to do with it. But there are ways of getting the land maybe a little less than market price. But at some point, if you're starting with bare soil, like an old farm, you can actually bury more people per acre than we do at Ramsey Creek. We have other issues at Ramsey Creek, like it's a very steep site, and there's some steep slopes where we just can't bury anybody. If you have a relatively flat landscape that's been farmed recently, then you can bury more people per acre without causing, actually, with that, in the process of doing the ecological restoration. So so, you know, in Atlanta, Georgia, for example, the land there is a lot more expensive, and so we are, and it's a clear cut that we're working on in a 8,000-acre heritage landscape designated by the government. And in that site, we'll be burying at least 100 people per acre. So it is a lot fewer people per acre, but we do charge a little more for the burial, for the plot. The overall cost of burial, though, can be half or less than half of what people would pay for a contemporary funeral with whole-body burial. You can also increase the, you know, the make it pencil out economically by including some scattering of ashes and that sort of thing. And we do take ashes. It's really the second best thing you can do for the environment in that it takes fossil fuels and you turn your body's nutrients into, you know, air pollution to a certain extent. But we still think that there are enough people who want to be cremated, and we want to make that opportunity available for them to be able to help save land too. There are a lot of ways to approach this, and you really have to tailor it to the landscape and the individual situation.
Let me give the phone numbers here in the studio where people can call and ask questions or make comments about green burial with our guests, Billy and Kimberly Campbell. In Champaign-Urbana, there are several local lines. Punch in 333-9455. That's 333-WILL, the call letters of the station. Elsewhere, you may call toll-free 1-800-222-9455. So the toll-free number is 1-800-222-WILL. Tell me what it looks like if you were to walk onto this site in South Carolina near Westminster in the southeastern part.
Yes.
what would someone see who's coming there for the first time? Do you see tombstones?
No. No, you don't. Well, I'll let Billy explain.
Well, actually, Kimberly does most of the tours, so maybe you should tell him. But really and truly, it's we try to make the – there are mounds where people are bare. We don't remove any soil, and we're very careful about keeping the soil layers in place. If it's the wintertime, for example, we take the leaves off the ground and then put them back on the grave afterwards, and we try to make it look as much as possible like what's called a – pit mound disturbance. When a big tree blows over, the roots come up, and if you go to a mature, old-growth forest, you're going to see a lot of mounds all over the place, and that's pretty much what it looks like after a while. The graves are generally have more plants on them than the forest around it, because we want the graves to be kind of a center of diversity for the forest. But most people don't notice that. They just come by and they'll notice there are these little ferny bits. And there are some stones, and we do allow stones to be of the local geological, same geological context. And those can be carved with just names and dates. And then when we place those stones, though, they're placed flat, but we also are very careful to leave a little space underneath the rock for reptiles and invertebrates and that sort of thing, which really play a very important part, in, especially in the Southern Appalachians, in forest ecology. We don't like to say we're making great snake habitat, but I guess we are. Yeah.
We have a couple callers already on our lines. Let's go to local line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead.
Thank you. I missed the opening of the program. When we're talking about green burial, are we burying without the concrete stuff underground so that the body can properly rot and be eaten? To me, that would be the point of green burial.
Yes, it's without a vault. It's with a wooden casket only. Is that correct, Campbell?
Yes. Sign me up when we have one in Champaign.
Well, the Campbells are coming to Champaign-Urbana soon. They'll be speaking live Monday, April 23rd. That's Monday, April 23rd at 7 o'clock at Provena Covenant Medical Center. They're being sponsored by the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Champaign County. And the rather provocative title for their talk that night will be Go Wild When You Die. new burial options for the 21st century. I don't know whether the Campbells picked that title or the Funeral Consumers Alliance, but it is intriguing.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling.
Cut off at me.
Yeah. Any other comments, Kimberly or Billy?
Oh, about the landscape. Basically, when people come to Ramsey Creek, it's a series of. It really is a different look from what we consider a contemporary cemetery to look like, because we don't have the standing tombstones. It doesn't look like a golf course. We do have some open meadow areas, but basically it's, the 33 acres that we have available for burial now is mixed hardwood, pine, forest. There are some old cotton fields that we are converting into eastern meadowland. But there are trails that you walk along through the forest and down by the creek, and the graves are located along the side of the creek. And they really do sort of blend in with the landscape. Sometimes, some mounds are higher than others. We dig the graves about 3 feet to 3.5 feet deep.
Why not 6 feet?
Well, when you put the soil, we don't take any of the soil away from the grave. So that all goes back.
Basically
you have a mound on top of that, so essentially you are 6 feet under.
Well, and the other thing is, of course, that the point here is that your body's going to be going back to the trees and become part of life again. If you bury the body too deep, then you just sequester all the nutrients that your body has, and they don't make it out. We have developed some kind of low-tech ways of making sure that happens more effectively, but we started looking at the first grave I ever dug. We hand dug them. I dug the first one 8 feet long, 4 feet wide, and 6 feet deep, and I realized, as you increase the dimensions of a grave linearly, the volume of dirt increases exponentially. So it's also a lot more disturbance when you have to pile all that dirt up and move it and everything. So it's just a We think it makes a lot more sense just to go with as small of a grave as is practical and sensible.
We have another caller waiting on line number two, local line two. Go ahead, please.
Yes. I have a family farm in central Illinois which has been continuously in the family since 1836, and about 12 of my relatives, including the founders, are buried there in a certain area, just in one of the fields. I would like to resume burying myself and other people there if I can. And this plot has not had any official designation that I know of. We have another place in Rhode Island where, because some Indians were buried there, it does have an official state designation, which allows you to bury people there in just a wooden coffin right on the farm. But do you know the procedure for getting your little family plot turned
into? There's actually a website that I saw today for Illinois, because we're coming up to give a talk next week and in Illinois, and there is a website, and I can get it for you if you email us. I can give you the website.
Oh, that'll be wonderful.
There is a way of registering family cemeteries. There's a Save Illinois Cemetery, something like that, .com. But it's a fellow who's very concerned about this. And I will tell you that small cemeteries in Illinois and Iowa and places, some of the best examples of tall grass prairie anywhere
mm-hmm.
are in old family and old country church cemeteries. And some of those are now the nidus of state parks. There's a number of them in Illinois, I'm pretty sure. The Nature Conservancy went through back in the late 70s and 80s trying to find some of these family cemeteries and small, church cemeteries that are
right.
Now defunct. And sure enough, a lot of them were just treasure troves botanically because of the fact that the land was never plowed. So.
Mm-hmm.
So it could have a lot of not just value for you, obviously, as part of your heritage, but it could also have some very interesting plant life on it.
Right. All right. That would be great.
Our email is Kimberly. You can just do Kimberly at memorialecosystems.com, and it's K-I-M-B-E-R-L-E-Y at memorialecosystems.com, and Kirmay and I will send you that web page.
At Memorial?
Memorial Ecosystems.
Eco, okay.
It's one word, memorialecosystems.com, and I'll send you that web page.
That's wonderful. Thank you. I'm also a thanatologist, and I think the reading you've done as a psychologist is great. Okay, thank you very much. Okay.
And do you have a website for the Ramsey Creek Preserve?
Yes, we do. You can go actually to www.ramseycreekpreserve.com or memorialecosystems.com. I will say our website is actually going under a major renovation right now so that we can because we're doing this other project in Atlanta, and it will be up on Tuesday or Wednesday. So unfortunately, listeners can't go there right now, but if they can just hang on for two more days.
tell us some more about the project in Atlanta. Is that something your firm, your corporation is doing?
Yes, and we're very, very, very excited about this project. It's actually a joint venture project with the Monastery of the Holy Spirit, a Trappist monastery that's located in just outside of Conyers, Georgia, which is about 25 miles from the metro, you know, downtown Atlanta.
It's a wonderful place. I spent a week there.
Oh, how wonderful!
Once I'm a Protestant minister, but I tried 1 week of monastery life with a friend as a visitor to the Monastery of the Holy Spirit, and I worked with one of the monks who was an architect.
Wow.
Before he entered the monastery, and what we did was try to make the place beautiful using very inexpensive but natural materials, plant materials.
Yes,
right. And what they're doing right now, they're doing a major project for sustainability. There's the new abbot and is there, and he very interested in sustainability. The project, I mean, people don't realize that there's a 8,000-acre greenway, and this is within the Atlanta metro area from what's called the Arabian Mountain Preserve, which is a grand outcrop, kind of like Stone Mountain, with all kind of rare plants on it. It goes all the way down the South River, and the anchor is the 2,000-acre monastery. So what we're doing is really part of a much larger landscape-level conservation effort that involves the monastery, and, of course, they're trying to shift their practices and go greener. So this is part of what, you know, we're very excited to be a part of this process, not only with the monastery, but also with this large-scale greenway that's going on.
Let me thank our caller for asking the question about the family farm, and thank you for sharing your website and email information with her and with other listeners. Tell us more about I interrupted you. Kimberly, you were starting to say something more about the monastery project.
Well, I think it's one of the things we're excited about. It's such a perfect marriage, as it were, between our kind of core goals and kind of the spirituality of the monastery. You know, there's obviously the Trappists have a, you know, the whole contemplative lifestyle is very important to them, and also their sense of stewardship of the earth. And so this really plays in with this. They in a lot of monasteries, this is also associated with the one in Gethsemane in Kentucky and with Medkin Abbey in the lower part of the state in Monk's Corner. And they have a lot of land that goes with them. And this project that we will be working on will truly be a wonderful restoration project because it's on a 70-acre clear cut. They've actually had some of their land in pine, but what we're hoping to do is to be able to really restore this land and maybe even use, you know, some of, you know, set up a small casket works with the pines, trees that are there making pine caskets.
But basically shifting from an industrial timber production model that they really needed to produce income, and the idea that we can help these guys do something with their land that's a little gentler and more in keeping with their core philosophy too. So it's been a lot of fun. It's been a learning curve for me. I grew up, you mentioned being a Protestant minister. I grew up Southern Baptist in South Carolina, and you know, for me though, it's been a real treat to be with these very gentle people.
I happen to know that in the Carolinas there are so few Roman Catholics that it's considered a mission field.
Yeah. We actually have, interestingly enough, several Catholic burials at the preserve. It's been, you know, it's been wonderful. Sometimes the people will have a full Catholic mass at the church before they come out to the preserve for the burial, and where they do the consecration of that land for, you know, of that area for them. But it really, you know, I think whatever spiritual lens you bring to a place like Ramsey Creek, whether you're a Jew, a Christian, a Buddhist, a Hindu, or whatever, there is something that happens spiritually to people when they are in a natural space. It's like seeing a beautiful sunset or sunrise, or and I think actually, you know, it's something you can't put words to. It's just a way you feel that enlightens you somehow and makes you feel a certain way, and that's wonderful. And I think the best expression of that was an evangelical lady that came to visit us from Augusta, Georgia. Interestingly enough, and she must have been about 75, and we were walking through the woods, and she said, "I have to tell you, Miss Campbell, that I have attended my church for 55 years, and I love my church, and I, you know, this is a place that was built by man to glorify God, but I have to tell you that being here in these woods, I realize this is God, this is his creation, and I feel so calm and so peaceful here, and I feel his spirit around me so much." And I was just absolutely astounded by, I did not expect this lady to have this type of reaction. I thought, if anything, that she would think we were kind of way out, you know,
druids
or whatever, you know. And the reverence with which she spoke about her sense of her relationship with God, or the, you know, being in this place that she felt so calm, was really was very humbling to me.
Well, that is one of the things we tell people about.
Excuse me, Billy. I just need to say we're about halfway through our program today, and you're listening to Keeping the Faith on WILL AM 580, a radio service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. Our guests today are Kimberly and Billy Campbell. Billy is a family practice physician. We're talking to them by phone in South Carolina. And listeners who would like to call in may use the following numbers: 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, elsewhere toll-free 1-800-222-9455. And that toll-free number can be used, of course, also by people not only in Illinois and Indiana, but who are listening on the Internet at WILL.UIUC.edu. where all of our programs are archived, and if you missed the first part of this program, you may go to that website and then go to AM 580 and then Keeping the Faith, and you'll see the topic for today, green burials, and our guests. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. Next week, we will have a guest host, Professor Don Nolan, and he'll be speaking with two folks, Dr. M.M. Siddiqui and Ziba Siddiqui, about building Muslim communities in America, issues and challenges. That's April 22nd here on Keeping the Faith from 5 to 6 p.m. Central Time in Illinois. On April 29th, our guest will be religion columnist from the Kansas City Star, Bill Timaeus, talking about Christians and Jews in World War II Poland. On May 6th, we'll be talking with Ashley Moore and other students here at the University of Illinois about Students for Economic Justice and Amnesty International and some important issues. Keeping the Faith is sponsored in part by the University YMCA, where I'm the executive director. Coming up at the Y in the next few weeks, starting on April 20, I guess that's next Friday, we'll be having a silent auction. You can still get tickets for that by calling the Y at 337-1500, a silent and live auction at the Hilton Garden Inn, a 6 p.m. Wine and soft drink bar, and then a dinner at 7, We have some fascinating things that have been donated. A lot of gift certificates, trips, an apartment in Spain, all kinds of things. So, people who'd like to come and support the University Y and its programs on this campus, please give us a call, 337-1500, and get a ticket for the auction Friday, April 20. And coming up the first week of May, starting May 7, our collections for our grand recycling program of things that students often throw away on this campus when they leave in the spring. We collect things at the Y and in various certified housing units. And also from the community. So if you have furniture, if you have household goods, if you have kitchenware that you're tired of but you want to recycle, donate it to the Y. We store it over the summer and have the largest garage sale in the county in the fall at the Stock Pavilion. So that starts May 7. If you have questions about it, call the Y or check out our website. Well, let's get back to our guests, and we have several callers waiting. Let's go to line number one. You're on the air.
Thank you. I love the title, Go Wild When You Die. I'm delighted with that topic. And also, since this is a program about keeping the faith, can you speak to both things, please, Steve, or whatever, the Campbells? And I'll hang up and listen to your answer. Thank you.
Could you hear that at all?
Yes.
Campbells? Great. Go ahead.
She wants us to speak to... I wasn't sure what the question was, actually.
Yes, just about the procedure someone would go through to find out more about if someone was making arrangements. What would they do if they contacted you?
Well, it all depends, obviously, if it's an in-state burial. Obviously, we don't have a site in Illinois yet. We hope to. But it could be this other lady will have a place that's available if we're not there. For people who want to be buried in South Carolina, though, it is legal in most states. You know, embalming is not required in any of the 50 states. It is legal to be shipped unembalmed across state lines. So you can be driven or flown here.
Is refrigeration required?
Yes. And a lot of mortuaries have refrigeration now, and that basically takes the place of embalming. And, of course, people do. There is the home funeral movement, too. There are a couple of websites for that. There's finalpassages.org, and there's also crossings.net.
Which tell you how to keep the body for up to 3 days at home with dry ice, that sort of thing.
And so it is possible, you know, the way that we actually bury, you know, people or the process is nothing new. I mean, this is the way that people have been buried for thousands and thousands of years. And, in fact, you know, the Pope was buried naturally. He wasn't embalmed either. So I figure if it's good enough for the Pope, it's good enough for most of us, you know. But it's so really and truly, you know, people do. There is a growing sense of the home burial movement too, where people do actually take care of their own dead. But the way our clients usually use the funeral home is with a more simple approach, where they use them just for doing the paperwork, for picking up the deceased, for storing them with refrigeration, and then delivering them to either the church for a service and then onto the preserve afterwards for the burial, or straight to the preserve for a graveside service.
And we do have, the number of clients from out of state, and whether it's here or we have a sister preserve in Florida that's very nice, Glendale Nature Preserve. What people need to know, though, they need to pre-plan. If you wait to the last second or after someone's already died, it can get to be very confusing and to do this. It can also be very expensive if you wait to the last second and don't use, say, the Funeral Consumers Alliance to work with the funeral homes and find one that's willing to do this kind of more basic service rather than all the bells and whistles and fancy stuff. Now, you can have bells and whistles and fancy things if you want it, but most of our clients don't.
Just to find a simple wooden casket is not easy sometimes.
Well, Costco's selling them now, for one thing. I mean, also at this point, New Mallory out of Iowa.
And in this area, we have the Amish that if you arrange ahead of time, they can make you one. But
yes. Also, I do actually have plans that I can send you, or I can send people. They can make their own. And, you know, you can always use them as I'm always, you know, have way too much stuff and I'm a pack rat. I'm always looking for boxes to put things in. But you can make them into coffee tables. You can make them into bookshelves. I think it actually makes a pretty interesting coffee piece table, you know, sort of, gosh, if the conversation gets a bit low or something, you can talk about, well, do you like our, coffee table? It's going to be my casket sort of thing. It can open up some pretty interesting conversation.
We have two other callers waiting. Let's go to our toll-free line, line number 4. You're on Keeping the Faith.
Oh, yes. Thank you for your show every week, Steve. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I had a couple of things here. When my mother died, we had her cremated, and they asked me if they wanted a nice plastic urn, and I said, oh, no. So we put her in a little cardboard box, and I'm just delighted to hear that you're doing this.
Well, thank you very much.
And you don't wrap them in plastic?
No, we don't wrap anything in plastic.
I know.
We're strictly dust to dust. I mean, you don't kind of mess with Genesis 3:19.
Oh, gosh. Well, anyway, I was wondering, and maybe you mentioned it, but I always thought there was a law that you had to be in a casket, but evidently not.
No. It's really interesting. South Carolina actually had a law that only a licensed funeral home that does embalming on the premises could sell a casket, and I think that's been overturned, which was interesting because you didn't actually have to have a casket.
Mm-hmm.
And people were, we had a local guy who was actually making hope chests that were just big enough in the right shape.
Well,
you could buy a hope chest from him and be buried, and we kind of got under that legal prohibition that way.
You mean you had to have a casket?
Well, No. What we're saying, you don't have to have a casket, but to sell a wooden casket, and people were having trouble finding them. So we had a local guy who was making, a great woodworker, and made these really nice hope chests that just happened to also be able to serve as a casket. Because in South Carolina, they had this crazy law that you couldn't buy a casket from anybody but a funeral home.
Now there are many cemeteries that have rules that you not only have to have a casket, you also have to have a vault. And that's partly because they don't want a depression there that's hard to mow over and that sort of thing.
And the thing is that a lot of times that is not actually a state law. That is just a requirement of that cemetery.
Yes.
And it's because they have a certain look that they want to maintain and a certain landscape that they want to maintain.
I see.
They don't want the pit mound disturbance like we talk about at Ramsey Creek. When you look at a forest floor, it's not flat.
Yeah.
It's mounds and it's depressions. But the thing is, nobody's going to, all our natural graves, have this sort of mound on top of them and then slowly kind of, settle as the years go by.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody's going to fall into a grave or hurt themselves or anything else like that. They are clearly marked, but they blend in with the landscape.
Could I ask one more question?
Sure, go ahead.
I that's very interesting, and I really appreciate you explaining that. I just had one more thing, and maybe you've already covered it, but do you put anything, extra worms or anything in the soil to...
There's plenty of
that. How long does it take for a body to biodegrade?
Well, and it really, this is one of those things that depends on where you are. I mean, obviously, if you're being buried in Barrow, Alaska, in the permafrost, you'd probably hang around for a long, long time. In a place like Urbana, and with our graves being as shallow as they are, and it's relatively warm in the summertime, there'll be some remains. It depends on whether the soils are acidic or basic. Here, with the acidic soils, all that's left of a body after a couple of decades would just be basically teeth, because the bone and everything else, which is alkaline, more or less dissolves in our acidic soils here. But it really does depend on soil temperature and acidity, alkalinity, and all, a bunch of other things. But our goal actually is for it to be pretty quick. We don't really want the body to be preserved. Our idea is the body goes back to the trees and the grasses and that sort of thing. And certainly in where you've got tall grass prairie, if you've ever looked at the soil horizons and how deep those roots go, I would expect that, you know, a lot of those plants, certainly the roots will reach down to the body, and that might make some people feel uncomfortable, but that's just the way life is.
Thank you, caller. We need to move on to another one. We have someone waiting on line number two, local line two. Go ahead, please.
Hi. This is wonderful. Thank you, Campbell's. I really appreciate this. Over the last 4 years or so, both of my parents have died, and we went through a horrible burial service and everything in preparation, and all of the siblings decided we would never do that again.
No.
We all wanted to be cremated. It's just, not to mention so expensive, but just I don't understand the premise behind it at all.
Well, the money, and I'll tell you that earlier in the show we were talking about, you know, that I'm a physician, and the thing that pushed me into doing this, because I saw this idea came to me basically in college and medical school, but my father died prematurely in 1985 at age 54. And we didn't expect it at all. And I just realized at the time that we could have bought probably 10 acres of land for what we spent on his funeral. And I was just thinking, for what? What was that for? All that fancy stuff that went in the ground.
Right.
And then we never see it again. And the service, for me at least, was not comforting. It was not comforting to see him made up as if he was still alive and that sort of thing.
Right.
And we spent a tremendous amount of money doing that. So that was the thing that made me know that I really had to do this.
Good for you.
Well, it was a similar thing, though. I was only 28 at the time, 28, 29, when he died. And so it was pretty much of a shock for all of us. But going through that, it just stuck with me that, gosh, I don't want to go through this. I don't want my family to go through it with me. So I think that a lot of us go through these, the boomers in particular, we're going through this thing now with our parents dying, and we don't want that. It doesn't resonate with us.
I think as well, when we talk about, you know, death is there's a lot of fear that's tied up with death, you know, in both the process and then thinking when we see people that, you know, we love die, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff that happens that we can't really explain. But there is, I think, everybody needs their 15 minutes of fame. And a lot of times people have told me, you know, I was in the middle of this service and I thought to myself, this makes no sense. This does not represent my mother or my father. You know, this doesn't represent this person that I love. And if they were alive, they wouldn't want, you know, this isn't the service that they would want. And I think there is this, in the same way that we don't all have the same type of wedding, some people, you know, choose to die at home and have their family look after them. And you know, a lot of people have criticized us for being, oh, this is just about being cheap and, you know,
are you
it's not respectful and stuff. And I don't see it that way at all. I
no.
think taking care of your own dead and helping with that is the most loving, wonderful thing you can do.
I agree. But are you getting some interesting comments or problems from memorial homes and florists? And stone memorials.
It's been fairly interesting. Some of the reactions.
Well, and I think at first, even locally, we had more trouble when people didn't realize what we've told them is, look, you know, the boomers are picking cremation. At this point, yes, boomers 50% without any kind of big drive to push that service because people just don't like what you're offering. It's kind of like they're still offering a 1957 Cadillac with big fins and it's black, and people don't want that anymore.
Let me interrupt just for a second.
Okay.
Thank you, caller, for those questions. We do have a couple other people waiting,
okay, sure.
So I do want to move ahead. But let me just reintroduce our guests for those who may have turned in later. We're talking about green burial. with the Campbells, Kimberly and Billy. Billy is a medical doctor there in South Carolina at the Ramsey Creek Preserve, which was the very first green cemetery in the United States. They'll be speaking here in Champaign-Urbana a week from Monday, April 23rd, at 7 p.m. at the Provena Covenant Medical Center Auditorium. That's 1400 West Park Street in Urbana, sponsored by the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Champaign County. The FCA is a nonprofit organization run entirely by volunteers who try to help people make decisions, end-of-life decisions, by providing information, such as this annual lecture. The Campbells will be here just that one evening. And but if you want more information about Ramsey Creek Preserve, go to RamseyCreekPreserve.com or MemorialEcosystems.com. I have a couple other callers. Let's go to line number one. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's interesting that you should be a physician because one of my ancestors was a doctor in Washington, Pennsylvania, and built the first crematorium in the United States.
How wonderful!
Yes.
Who was that? Who was your ancestor?
Francis Julius LeMoyne.
Actually, the guy that founded the first rural cemetery in the United States, which is kind of the forerunner of green cemeteries, was a doctor for Mount Auburn in Boston, was a physician. So I feel like I'm maybe not out here all by myself. So that's great to know, though, that the first guy who did a cremation was a doctor. That's wonderful.
Well, there you are, and it's nice to know that there are doctors who do not shrink from considering the inevitable end of their patients.
Yes.
Well, and I also work with hospice. I'm a co-director of a local hospice group as well. So
you're definitely an asymptomatic physician.
Well, I do have to tell you one funny story about a friend of Billy's who's also a doctor who had somebody come to visit them, kind of interview him, you know, as their physician, and he said to the doctor, how many of your patients die? And he turned.
What
percentage of your patients die? And he said 100%. And you know, because we are all going to die.
Yes,
you know,
we are.
And physicians obviously, you know, deal. And I can tell you, Billy deals on a daily basis with people, you know, with dying, you know, with people who are dying or he has to tell them that they have cancer or they have some sort of disease. So he's interested in obviously preventive care and keeping them well. But a lot of what physicians deal with is death and dying.
Now, Dr. LeMoyne was more interested in public health. He thought that putting cemeteries up on a hillside was not very good for the water system, and you can't blame him.
Let's let that be one of the questions for the Campbells. What about that?
Well, that's one of the main questions we get. We actually had a if you think about it. The Ramsey Creek right now, we actually have been doing some fecal coliform sampling in Ramsey Creek, and there is a problem, but it's mainly from cattle upstream. And, you know, every cow that's in South Carolina, they can just walk right into the stream and poop and stuff. And so what happens is you get all this fecal coliform. So at Ramsey Creek, basically the body doesn't become radioactive when it dies. You basically got some fecal coliform in your gut, and it's not very much. And you bury that, and it takes a long time for the stuff to percolate down through the soil layers. We have heavy clay, and no one's drinking well water. So as it turns out, we had a groundwater engineer came in, and because we asked him, we said, "What about this?" And he laughed and said, "Look, you know, this is just not going to be a problem if you're looking at this, even if with the densities you're talking about, and the frequency of burial and all these other issues." He said it's a lot bigger issue about the cattle in the stream. It's a lot bigger issue about the deer and other animals.
Other industrial runoff.
Oh, well, and everything else that's going on in the stream. So basically, Ramsey Creek should actually clean up the water. I mean, our water, if it comes through, now that we've got 3/4 of a mile of stream frontage, and the fact that we don't have cattle and we don't have these other things going on, this is it drops. It should actually be cleaner when it leaves our property than when it enters our property because of the aeration that occurs in the drops and everything else. But that's we've thought about it, And there's been some research in the UK, and we'll be glad to share that with anyone who's interested.
We also don't bury people right immediately by the creek with natural, you know, whole body burial. We have a setback from the creek, of course. It's basically just using good common sense.
We're getting close to our end time. Do you have one last question, caller? We've lost her. We have one more caller waiting. You need to be very quick.
Okay.
Yes, go ahead. Line number two, go ahead, please.
Yes. Caller number two?
Yes, please.
I got cut off earlier.
Yes, well, go speak quickly.
All right. I wanted to know what the problems were concerning funeral or memorial homes and florists and state memorials concerning your project. Do you have problems with them?
We have better relationships now. Early on, I think it was a little rockier, but what we were talking about, basically, I think now the funeral industry is realizing that people are choosing cremation and very little ceremonies with them because they don't like what the funeral homes are offering. So if the funeral homes can be involved with this or facilitating home funerals, this sort of thing, that's going to broaden their market in the future. So we just feel like that they need to recognize, and I think they do recognize, that they're losing the boomers.
But you don't care what kind of ceremonies people have before. You're concerned
right.
with the burial.
Right.
Right.
Right. But what happens is, I mean, the whole kind of fancy schmancy stuff with the steel coffins and this sort of thing, that was a major profit center. So the funeral industry is going to have to adapt. They're having to adapt to this kind of wave of cremation. And I think this is the next wave is green burial, and if they want to survive and they want to, I mean, and listen, I've got friends who are in the funeral industry that I grew up with. I mean, I spent the night at a funeral home when I was a kid, and they'd run downstairs and get a little silk pillow for me to sleep on. I mean, you know, because the funeral home was actually
in their house.
And so I grew up and you know, spending the night at the funeral home. And so these guys are on call, and they work long hours. And so I'm not disparaging them, but I think that if they want to survive and if they want to be meaningful or have some kind of relevance, they're going to have to adjust what they're doing.
We're out of time, unfortunately. Okay. I want to thank our guests. We've been talking with Kimberly and Billy Campbell from South Carolina, who started the first green cemetery in the United States, Ramsey Creek Preserve. Go to RamseyCreekPreserve.com for more information. The Campbells will be speaking at Provena Covenant Medical Center Auditorium for the annual meeting of the Funeral Consumers Alliance of Champaign County. That's Monday, April 23rd at 7 p.m. That's a free lecture, and there'll be a chance for question and answer, and you can pick up a newsletter for information about prices and various things for funeral homes here in the Champaign-Urbana area and cemeteries, that sort of thing. The talk will be at 1400 West Park Street, Urbana, on the 23rd of April. Coming up at the Y, next Friday, April 20th, is a auction. Should be a lot of fun. If you'd like tickets, call the Y tomorrow, 337-1500. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the executive director of the University YMCA and the usual host for this program. Our technical director tonight has been Matt Kessler. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Ron Mallett's father died when he was 10 years old, and he wanted to bring him back, so he dreamed of building a time machine. Ron Mallett grew up to become a theoretical physicist who studies quantum mechanics, and he's still trying to figure out how to go back in time. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time, under the best of our knowledge, we'll talk about the physics of time. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 on WILL Urbana. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s and northwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, sunny with a high in the lower 60s and northwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s and north winds 5 to 10 miles per hour, becoming southeast after midnight.
WILL programming is funded in part by a grant from TK Service Center, 806 Perkins Road in Urbana, offering automotive repair on cars and trucks by ASE-certified technicians. In business since 1984, they perform computerized engine diagnostics, alignments, brake, suspension, preventative maintenance, and other repairs. A shuttle service for customers is also available. 344-0800 or on the web at tkservicecenter.com.
It's 6 p.m. This American Life is next.